Blog Talk Radio.
On Wheels Now.
Welcome to On Wheels Now. It's your inside look at local motorsports, where racers, crews, race officials, and everybody else can come and talk about racing.
All right, great job. Thanks. That's what we like to do here. Put you on the spot. I'm in Gary's spot tonight, so this is all up to you.
Wait, so Mike is in Gary's spot. Yeah. Justin's in Mike's spot. Does this mean the multiverse is real?
Yes. Hey, it seems like the world's been upside down, so it couldn't get any worse than this, could it?
2 years.
Go ahead.
Just when we thought it was going back to normal, it didn't work.
It doesn't, yeah. Not in the racing world, at least.
We got back to a little bit of normal.
That's true.
Omicron.
Oh, don't even say that.
Is that a Transformer?
It's a new race. Sounds like it's a new race team.
Yeah, right.
We'll put that on a patch on our race suits. How about that?
Well, yeah. Since Gary's not here, I get to come in. And we also got Matt, Mike, and Johnny Filatra. How you doing, Johnny?
Oh, I'm doing great. Hey, guys. Hope you guys are having a merry off season and soon to be happy Christmas.
I know, right?
This fucking year flew by.
Yeah, it did.
Woo. It did. It
drags to about Halloween, and then after Halloween, it just
it's like October was like yesterday. Mm-hmm. Still, I don't even remember what happened Thanksgiving. It was all a blur.
get a food overdose, right?
And no, there was no alcohol involved.
Okay, that was the next thing. Yeah,
I can't say that.
That's funny.
Once you put up with enough family, alcohol needs to be involved.
Yep.
So if you're wondering what's going on, Gary's not here. So of course it's December 21st. The show just before Christmas, so thanks for joining us, and Justin's sitting in as the guest host, so he's going to be the man with all the questions and all that. And of course, we got a great guest tonight, Johnny Spilatro, again, one of my favorite drivers out there. Appreciate you coming in, especially in super stocks, but love to see in the pro late models, and it's cool to see you kicking some butt there and some action.
Super stocks.
Yeah, me too. I that's one of my favorite.
It was a hot topic last week. I paid attention to that.
I missed that, so sorry I couldn't be here for all that. But
Superstocks were definitely my class. Superstocks and bombers. I like the real race cars.
That's stock car. Where stock car racing is.
I like
right?
that. 100%. I like that.
Yeah, and that's the class that really molded me the most to where I'm at right now. And it set me up well for the super late model, division. Cause I got a really good taste of basically, handling a full size stock car, in a track like that.
And they don't handle like the, you know, the super lates and the late models.
Right. It's a stock car turned into a race car.
Exactly.
And you're limited on what you can do to a super stock in that division.
It makes racing a super late model that much easier. So when I moved up, the transition was in 2018, it was for the most part pretty seamless.
Right.
I
was excited about that when we first heard about you jumping up into that class. It was fun to hear that, first of all.
It was exciting for me to finally break it.
Do you remember getting into that during that time from super stocks and just really getting into that? And then
I remember being nervous as heck.
Yeah.
I remember underestimating cold 30-45s. It took me forever to kind of get back going once I looped it around. But once I kind of got my feet underneath me, you know, the first test we ran, I think I had a personal goal of running a 15.5 that night,
which is smoking fast, by the way.
ended up running 15.2s.
No kidding.
Day. Yeah.
Wow.
I wish I was able to pull off 14.2s. Then we'd be tour racing.
Well, exactly. Well, you know what? And that could be just a tire difference too. You know, you guys are probably right there. It's just a matter of,
It's a discovery. There's a little bit more to it than that. First it was engine war, and as we figured that out, it ended up being chassis war. It's pretty much gotten down to the point, at least for the SRL Southwest Tour for the Super Late Division. It's starting to get a little bit there for like Pro Late Division too.
Right.
It's basically either you have a Hamke, a Fury, a Seneca, Van Dorn, what have you, in order for you to even be remotely competitive. If you had or a homegrown chassis, had anything else than that, it'd be a miracle.
So, do you think that Pro Late Division, that's what you're talking about, I'm assuming, or you're talking about the actual Super Lates also?
Oh, I'm talking about both.
So, do you think the Pro Lates, the purpose of the 602 and all that, it did what it was supposed to do, make it more cost effective? Because it seems like it's still an expensive division
to
run.
It's a good idea, compared to a $3,000, $4,000 engine,
right?
Compared to a $30,000 steel motor or parts motor that you have to build up from the ground up, it seems like it's a good idea. The problem with that is there's a lot of logistics with the front end of the chassis that you had to change, and that's why we had to miss ISA race Ace this year, because we had to literally chop some bars to literally make the 602 fit right.
So
because we had to sit it up higher.
Okay. Right.
Because if we sat it up to where it is, it would have dragged the oil pan, and it wouldn't have worked.
Right. So you actually went, when you went from super stocks, of course, you went to a super late model, which you went from, 17-second division to a 15-second division, which is a 2-second jump.
And now we're at a 16-second division.
Right. Well, so with that jump, though, obviously you had some seat time in there and gained a lot of experience. And now jumping in from that to a Prolate model, do you feel the difference between the Super Lates and the Prolate?
A little bit, especially when we converted to 602. I had to just change my driving style completely.
Absolutely. That's a good point.
Yeah. It used to be where I would be on throttle for as long as I possibly could before I even start to turn, mm-hmm. and then jam on the brakes really hard just to even set up my entry. Now I barely even touch them.
Right.
And with the key with the 602s, with the Prolates, you really, because I think I touched on this last time I was on,
right.
It's a center exit type track. It's basically all momentum. So
right.
you can't really touch the brakes, too much. Otherwise, you're going to get killed on exit.
Right. So you're carrying, with the Super Lates, like you said, you got a lot more horsepower. So you're driving in hard, you're braking it, setting it, and getting it turning the corners. But obviously in a 602, you don't have this horsepower. So you're just carrying momentum. You're trying to stay off the brakes as much as possible, but carrying your consistent speed from straights in through the corners.
Exactly,
obviously.
That. Momentum's the name of the game for
That changes strategy on passing and everything else as far as that goes, because you don't have the horsepower just to make a jump on somebody. You have to.
Yeah, it's more so with setup.
Right.
We've been trying to get at aggressive with spring packages and shock packages, mm-hmm. and what have you, as well as gear ratio on that. So there's been a lot of trial and error this year, for
right.
sure.
Is that something, obviously that Prolate rule package is supposed to make it where you can race at Irwindale, let's say, or
anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Another track. Have you gone out to any other tracks and raced, or even thought about the SRL, their touring series as the Prolates?
Well, my original thought process was to, since they're putting the Prolates back on the half mile, was to try out Irwindale.
Right.
But that got dashed, at least for the February race, because with our schedule releasing and whatnot. So So we're going to try Havasu again. I know we had a little bit of rough luck the last few times we went out there. So we'll try that again, see if we could get some better fortune. I think the one on January the 15th is the only one I'm going to be able to do,
okay.
Which is a little bit of a bummer because looking back on it, I actually do like the track a lot. It's a real good driver's track to where you could kind of test out and hone your skills and really teach yourself patience and whatnot. And the competition is pretty stout there too. I wish they did more than four races for their championship.
Right.
I think for a winter heat series, a six race series would probably be okay. Eight at the absolute most.
Right.
I wish I could run on there, more or often because, It was a little bit discouraging at first, when I tried it out, but then you kind of had some time away from it. You raced at the Bullring,
right?
You kind of had some thought onto it, and you're all like, "Huh, I definitely want to give that another go again." So
no matter how you do it, that track, you can't conquer it unless you keep going back to it and trying different things and throwing something different at it. And of course, that's not a horsepower track like I would consider Vegas more of a horsepower track, but Havasu, I think there's a little more going on that track, two groove track. And like you said, the competition is really good there, so you got to really be alert.
Yeah, and that's the goal at the end of the day, right? Is to show up at a racetrack and be as confident as in your abilities at one track as you are to the next. I don't want to be a one track jack, but I don't want to be a two track tick either. So I was really eager when I found out that the SRL Pro Lates were going back to the half mile for some races at Irwindale, as they should.
Have you raced the half mile at Irwindale?
No, but I want to.
That's a fun half mile to run. I have ran that in the trucks back in the day when there were speed trucks, and it's a different beast, it's
absolutely,
but it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. It's definitely that in Kern County, I feel like would be the biggest beast out of all of them, because
that race
is like a super speedway pretty much. You have to give that track a lot of respect.
I haven't been there, but I've heard that from everybody. It's a fast track. It's got a lot of banking and but it's one of those tracks where if you mess up, you could mess up big.
It's pretty big. So,
but, I think for the most part that usually doesn't happen. Things can happen, but, you don't anticipate.
I think the people that race there kind of, are aware of that now. They're more racing the racetrack at that point than they are, just racing each other for that. So that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. So do you foresee going and doing any traveling with the SRL? I mean, do you miss maybe even doing the super lates in the SRL?
Well, I miss super late racing, period.
Okay.
If I had a preference, I definitely liked super late model racing better than I did pro late model racing. But unfortunately, pro late model racing is where it's at.
Yeah.
If you're going to be super late model racing, you're going to have a lot. You're going to need a lot of cash to run the tour, which we obviously don't have.
Right.
But I like the way that the pro late model class has grown. I fully expect it to be, Division One within, or at least announced to be Division One within the next coming weeks or so, because the class is really, it kind of resurrected itself in a way. But also on the flip side, I definitely, on the competition side, also kind of wish things would be more tightened up between the guys that are able to run the Hamkeys and the Furies and the ones that don't, like us. Because there's a difference between the two. A lighter weight chassis is going to be able to, to roll through the corners faster than a heavyweight chassis would do.
Right.
But on the flip side, the heavyweight chassis is more durable during a wreck. So there's a plus.
Yeah, that's true. And with each chassis, though, do they have different, I wouldn't call them penalties, but restrictions, weight restrictions, left side weight differences between
Between perimeter
between offsets or anything like that?
Besides between perimeter and straight rail, I don't think so. No,
okay.
not with a, there's no penalty between, for an example, a Hamke or a Howe or a, or a, or a, or a Victory Circle or a Pathfinder versus a Fury, mm-hmm. I don't think. And you could just tell by like the bare bones between the two of them, you know, the difference
right.
between the two of them just by appearance and girth alone is
right.
pretty substantial.
The car you're racing in, this is the one that your super late model that you've modified to fit the Pro Late.
That we've basically converted
okay.
into
it.
Pretty yeah.
comfortable in that car, right?
It's an advantage.
Right? That helps a lot.
It's an advantage. It's a car that I know fairly well, but also on the flip side, I'm starting to notice some things where it could be better. As a regular bullring super late, it's about as top notch as it could possibly
right.
get. But as a but as anything else between a full blown pro late or versus an SRL super late, there's going to be some tweaks and modifications that are going to need to be made. So we're doing some R&D this off season, and we're going to see what we can do to make it better. Really,
is there any talk out in the field of new technologies and things people are doing that you guys would like to try to adapt to your race program?
We've already have maybe. I can't say which.
Okay.
But we
don't want to know any details.
There are a couple of new things that are out there.
You know,
for sure.
It's cool to see all the newer stuff that comes out. Of course, me and Gary were back at PRI this last week or so, and man, it's unbelievable the technology that has come out in the last few years or so, and it's just pretty cool, man. Just these chassis and the suspensions and just everything else is just going forward is something else. So it's cool to see that, and cool to see local teams adapt a lot of that stuff and start using it.
Absolutely. Out of all the conventions that I've been to, I really haven't been to that many,
yeah.
but CES was like the big one, but
right.
PRI is like next right up on the,
right.
on the bucket list. Cause you could really take some things
oh, yeah.
from that and then kind of bring that back home, and then you brainstorm a little bit.
Right.
So
no, that's cool. That's cool.
So yeah, question last week, Cindy had mentioned that, there's going to be some traction compound on the bull ring next season.
Is there? Oh,
because,
I didn't know. I didn't hear.
SRL
okay.
is going to be racing a couple races there, and they're going to be prepping the track. So if there is the traction compound, how do you think that's going to affect?
Well, considering that I've ran the traction compound, the first few laps that I ran it, it typically doesn't like it very much when you run up there. I mean, it seems like especially through turns 3 and 4, you feel like you're running up there a little bit faster than you normally are. But if you just run the traction compound up there alone, like you lose like a good solid second and a half.
So are they talking about using a compound to speed up the outside line?
I'm not quite sure. We were talking about skid plate, and she said that they were trying to figure out a way to not run the skid plates on the track as much, only on the straights and not in the turns, because there's going to be traction compound, and didn't want the car scraping them off.
I'll have to find out about that, and I'll kind of touch base on that. Because to me, it's tough, because like if you get
if you can get two grooves going through the turns.
Well, but you know, like Mark Allison had brought up something. Sometimes it's not better to try to make the outside groove faster, but to maybe make the inside groove slower.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would even up, you know, which makes a lot of sense. So there's a lot of different ways you can go about that, I think.
In relation to the skid plates, since the infield is, the infield
right.
needs to be redone anyway.
Right.
But if they were, you could do a figure eight like in reverse, and then
yeah.
have like the
Absolutely.
Regular straightaways be the turns, and then the infield
right.
straights be the
there you go.
Be the straights.
If
I think that would be pretty
if
cool.
Not,
that would be
they
cool.
were looking at chicanes, running the
yeah.
running the straights, and then right before the turns,
mm-hmm.
hook it in early, and then kind of do
the
like
chicane,
a chicane, and then
you could do that too.
Yeah, they do that at Irwindale mm-hmm. when they do theirs. They,
yeah,
they
run on the inside,
right, and use chicanes. But no, I didn't know that, so I first time hearing about it, so I don't know if that's good or bad, or if that's something that they are going to do with adding some kind of
It's going to be for the series,
okay.
But mm-hmm. there'll be residual on there, and on the nights that they're running, and then we run right after, there's going to be something on there. So it's going to change up the track one way or the other.
And have they done that in the past? I don't know if they have or not. I don't know. Have you heard of them doing that before?
Not at the Boring.
Yeah. How about you? You don't know if they've ever run a compound on that track before?
Not before this year.
No,
I mean, they brought it. They introduced it at the end of last year, I think, for the K&N race. And there was definitely a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
We ran up there. I ran up there a couple times, as well as a couple other guys, but by and large, everybody else wanted to stay on the low line.
Right.
So they coned off the whole inside groove off and forced both modifieds and late models to run at the same time to just work that traction compound in.
Oh wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that was a practice session, I believe in the second to last race of the season or something like that. So that was a trip within itself, and that was all designed to, work the traction compound, into the lower groove to make the racing a little bit more even. So I don't know if it makes the outside groove faster, but it gives the outside groove more grip, so you can hang out there a little bit longer than you normally would otherwise. So I think that's the design of it.
Instead of one or two laps, maybe a handful of laps or something. Yeah.
According to Kevin Terrell, they have ran compound on the track before when Tim ran the place.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. So
I don't remember that.
I don't recall it. I mean, they may have ran it maybe for a test session that, or like during the break that we
or
probably don't even know it about, but I personally don't remember
a traction
compound being down there.
And again, we're hoping
could
Kevin,
be wrong though,
and Kevin might not know either.
Wrong.
I don't know, Kevin.
Well, Kevin,
sorry.
Kevin
sorry.
Was
before,
here for the conversation
before Tim ran the place.
Okay, all right. Okay. So yeah, that was a little bit before
a lot
time.
Of comments rolling.
Well, let me tell you, and Tim's ran the place for a long time before this last year. So that was a long time ago.
Stafford before him.
Yeah,
but interesting. So that, there's always pros and cons to running a compound or something like that. So.
It's been an age-old debate because of how the Cup Series is doing it.
Is that what's happening? Cup has
they're running traction compound literally everywhere.
Have they for a long time, or is this something that they started doing fairly recently?
It's pretty
much
at every track now.
Yep.
But wasn't at every track before.
No, before it was just, certain tracks that would have,
And was there a reason why? Is this to make this more exciting side-by-side racing, or do you know? I mean, you're a NASCAR guy. You watch NASCAR all the time.
I know,
don't get
before they were doing it on some of the older tracks that would have, the ripples and the bumps where you'd almost have that loss of control. I know they were putting it down there just to kind of keep control.
They were doing it at Bristol.
Yeah.
Bristol was the big hot spot on that. They put the traction compound on the low groove, hoping that it would come back. But what they did was it ended up migrating back toward the top.
Yeah,
and you got the same thing.
And again, and I'm sure there's a lot involved with that, with what type of compounds, the mix of the compound, the temperatures of the outdoor. There's a lot of variances, I think, and when you put this.
I think they're trying to
compound.
They're trying to bring the cars closer together, and not so much
doing it through tech.
Without a straight shot where you got, the single file line going for, 30, 40.
Just wet the track. For everybody.
Bomber wet track.
Yeah,
right?
There you go. Just wet the track. Okay?
That was when bombers were fun.
I liked it when you guys did the wet track.
Yeah, me too.
It was a fun show.
01 through 05.
Right.
It was 07 also.
Yeah, speaking of the bombers.
That's
pretty much
a skid plate.
Yeah.
You used to have to.
Is my mic even on? Everybody's saying they can't hear me.
Really? Yeah. I'll turn you up.
Let's see.
Keep talking.
Testing. There we go.
Oh, there
I
it
hear
is.
Way more now.
There it is.
Kevin's like
speak into the mic.
I'm right against it.
All Oh, well. Now, you know, speaking of the bombers, like back in the day when I thought they were fun, the big long roll base and the 7-inch rims and stock, pretty much stock everything. And they, when they first came out with that, it was supposed to be an endurance class. It's supposed to run 100 laps every time and then wet the track and all this other stuff.
I still remember that car sitting on the back stretch because there was no cautions and he was just sitting there the whole race.
Well, that was the idea, was they weren't going to throw cautions unless obviously there was a safety issue on the track.
That sounds like a pretty big safety issue.
Depending on where you're at on the track, I guess.
Did Michael Massey, was he race control back then?
Right.
Well, you were building bombers out of the junkyard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You would pick up a car on the street or even from the junkyard, and you're like, and then you would just you run and pick up stuff, and you're doing stuff.
Well, and when they first did it, like I said, it was supposed to be an endurance class, so it was supposed to be able to last 100 laps. So when I built one early on, one the very first year, and it was just a Monte Carlo with the 305 in it, even. It wasn't even a 350, but it was a street car. I mean, you could have just driven around town, and I just,
exactly.
You know. So it would last, but I think Carly Larson ended up buying that car eventually, but if you remember her, she used to run that LV local racing scene back in the day.
Okay, way back in the day.
Way back in the day.
That's a throwback.
Yeah.
I remember
throwback.
That website.
Yeah.
That was Facebook back then.
Yeah, MySpace back then.
That was Facebook. Everybody was on that site.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That was your Facebook where everybody would go and be on the.
Well, when I was younger, that's what the dirt track racing was. You know, it was the Chevy Monte Carlos. It was the Buicks. It was the Oldsmobiles.
Right. So those were stock cars that were, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the problem with today is you go to the junkyard, you can't get these rings anymore as easy.
Even
so
if it's the Camaros. You can't find the Camaros to save your life.
No, not at all. Or anything else, really, almost. But that's where, like, the...
Even parts at our level are getting hard to find.
Yeah.
Like, I was shopping around for radiators, and I couldn't even find the right one.
Right.
They used to be easy pickings.
Well, I know. I mean, today's...
I'm going to say, right now, it's a completely different world.
Right. I mean, even air conditioning business, like Justin knows, or any business, you know, the parts are sitting. They always tell you, well, they're sitting in a container off the shore of Los Angeles.
That's what happened to my grandpa's house when they remodeled it after a flood. It took months to even get the flooring even here because it was just sitting on a crate. I guess in like the San Diego port for the longest time because. There's literally no supply, workers there to pick the damn things up. So,
So just we'll get our own little boat and go out there. Just start opening containers and getting parts. No.
Yeah. Grab and go.
Grab and go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Pick a part.
There was some shit on Facebook I saw, and it was like Black Friday shopping. There was a bunch of fucking boats going towards all the shipping containers.
Yeah.
Well, what are you supposed to do? You need things, you know?
Well, on a side note, Arizona Shea said hi, everybody.
Oh, well,
she's been listening to the whole show.
Hello, and we know she's a Johnny Spilatro fan, so.
That's my Padawan there. I remember you guys had her on a while back.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, I'm
she's
glad to see
quiet.
Her. And she's going to be doing some bomber racing, I'm assuming, this coming up year.
All she keeps putting is, speaking of bombers.
She loves that class.
Are you guys going to help her at all? I mean, does she?
Oh yeah. We've helped her. It all started with her dad. Yeah. We used to be,
Donnie?
Yeah.
Cause Donnie's on here saying hi to everybody too.
There you go. We used to be coworkers when I was at Polar Shades.
Okay.
And he was one of the first guys.
And you're still sporting a Polar Shade, sweatshirt.
Well, they are my sponsor.
Oh, they're okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
As well as, oh, there we go. G Woods Racing Experience.
Cool. We'll get to that some more.
We'll get to that in a little bit. we were coworkers. He was one of the first guys I talked to about racing. The owner of the company was a huge race fan, real good friend of my dad.
Right.
They were huge supporters of mine ever since my rookie year in super late model. So they're like family to me, really.
Cool.
So all those guys. They kind of put me in a good place today, so I owe them that.
That's cool. You know what? And that's cool to come from where, you know, you got to think back when you first started racing, whether it was in super stocks or jumping up into super lates, the help that you got hand it down to you, and now you have a chance to kind of help other people just getting into it and, you know, helping them excel. That's got to be exciting.
Absolutely. I'm still kind of, like, at, like, a young age, but, like, it was really cool to be, like, in that, you know, mentorship type of, right. you know, type role just to show around how to get around the racetrack, what kind of work it takes to kind of put on our cars, because she'll occasionally help out at our shop too.
Right.
And overall, just try to get a handle on life, because as everybody gets older, the tougher it gets.
Right.
So it's been a really cool process.
To help her grow up, it's her turn to buy pizza next time for the shop, for your pizza night.
we'll let her get a stab at Shauna on that. Maybe Hazer might have her lose a race better too.
There you go.
I bought enough pizza over there.
Cool.
Well, speaking of young female drivers, late model truck series, Chloe Lynch is going to be driving next year.
Yep. She's going to be doing some full size racing, which is going to be cool. We'll get to that eventually. Mm-hmm. But thanks.
Thanks.
No, the point I was making is just nice seeing these young female drivers involved.
Well, you know, and I think
doing well.
Yeah, I think like Kaylee Barker, kind of, you know, and going back to, you know, Donna Gunther back in the day, you know, the Secretary of Speed, you know.
Kaylee is now engaged.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
congrats. Congratulations.
To Jeffrey.
Oh,
okay. Jeffrey Peterson, another
race car
driver.
Congratulations. I didn't know that. So that's cool. You know, another young, talented driver just moving on with life, you know. So that's cool. You know, speaking of young drivers, you know, we always forget. You know, I always think of Johnny as this
mature
that's been racing for all this time. But you're still learning. How many years are you into it so far now?
Let's see, I'm 26 right now. When did I start racing bandos? When I was 12, so like around 13-14 years, if my math is good.
Is that crazy?
That's crazy, because there's some, you know, NASCAR drivers that just have that.
Right. No, that's cool. You know, you start at that young age, and, you know, just you're still, like, in full size. You're still, like, molding yourself and learning
exactly.
a lot of things. So that's still cool. Yeah, and you're still young, of course. So.
Yeah, no, it's a crazy process. And I'm not exactly – I mean, I'm still young, but I'm not necessarily a young guy there anymore. you got the Reef brothers there, too, as well as a couple other young guys that sprouted onto the scene and started doing really well. And everybody's trying to keep up with them.
So what does that do to your racing program? I mean, has it changed how you guys are looking at doing things coming up this next
massively,
year?
Massively.
Okay.
And
why do you think they exploded like they have?
Because they're first of all, Tanner and Tyler, they're both very talented drivers. Tony Jackson does a really good job at putting really good cars, you know, right underneath them. That's number one. Now, number two, having said all that, they got ahead on the curve with all the technology.
The new technology.
And had the backing to back it up, too. So you need both.
Right.
You need both to kind of make it work. We just have half the equation there.
Well, now
we just have cars that are supposed to run in the back, and we get them to supposed to run in like the top five, I guess. So
right, no, that's
we just
that's
need
where,
that extra oomph.
And that's where your talent comes in. You know, what you've learned is to get that race car up to where it's at and maybe a little bit more. So that's going to be exciting to see you compete, you know, with some of that technology.
And very limited with the whole 602 package as well, because everybody's on that.
Right.
I think I alluded to it, you know, a little bit earlier that the crate motor – well, not necessarily in a previous show about how the crate motor guys were kind of running ahead with like the big motor guys.
Yeah.
When the change happened, you know, that same cast of characters were still there, up at the same, you know, they were the still usual suspects, because, you know, they got ahead on the curve with new technology in terms of suspension and braking packages and whatever else that they have there.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to try and, you know, relearn and kind of catch up on, and hopefully have a better year than we had this year.
Cool. Where'd you end up finishing? Did you race all the races last year?
Well, I mean, I missed the one due to the engine change, but
okay.
For the most part, I ran all of them, mm-hmm. and literally every single week we had we had some kind of issue. I think in the banquet there was that picture that Rob Street posted on the slideshow where there was my car up on all four jack stands. My dad's underneath it.
Right.
I'm dumpster diving up into the throttle compartment of it. We're kind of, and my feet sticking out up in the air. That literally is the
sell out your season.
That's,
right,
that's
yeah?
the sum of our season.
Right.
You know, we've had the speed.
Right.
We just haven't had the luck that kind of backed up the results on it.
Right.
I mean, I could go on for days and days on whatever issues that we had. I mean, we had literally won every single race. And the last one was was kind of a goof up on my end, but you live and learn.
No, exactly. You know, if you don't make mistakes, you can't learn from them. And if you do make mistakes and learn from them, then you're just going to be that much better. And next year should be a testament to that. That's going to be exciting to watch you, your team.
I know so.
Everybody that put their 100%+ into it.
Exactly. I really do love the team that we have over at Scuderia SG Speed. We don't have much, but we're eking out every little bit at that we can. I mean, we're aware of where we're at, and we're aware that we need to. That we need to do better. Now we're just trying to do what we can to kind of push those avenues a little bit and just gap closer and closer to the front. I believe if we can do it, I know we can do it. If there's any set of guys I'd rather do it with, it'd rather be mine than anybody else's. But that doesn't change the fact that it's still going to be a steep hill to climb, especially if the championship's the goal.
Right. And that's something else. Yeah, once you get started, you kind of can get a feel of what direction, if you're going to go for a championship point, chase or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is Gaffarini going to do some racing also again? And
seems like he is.
I mean, has he upped his, I know for a long time he raced an old chassis and all that. I don't know if he's changed that over the last couple of years. So he's got something that's...
He's racing at Havasu this year a lot more than I am.
Right.
But we're definitely doing everything we can with what we have to kind of make sure both cars kind of get to the get to the front. You know, it's fun. It's fun, racing in with each other, and there were a couple of times, and there were a lot of times on my side where we kind of matched him on speed and got out a little bit better results, but we're kind of shifted our focus now to inching the gap a little bit closer and closer to the fast guys like the Reefs and the. And the Kellers and that Peterson guy. So we're kind of focused on, just closing the gap to them and just hope that both cars get elevated to that level.
Right. Well, I don't think there's too many people that have the type of experience that Gaffarini has at the Bullring on that track. So, there's a lot to learn from somebody that has that kind of track time. No matter what kind of vehicle is racing out there, do you get a lot of good pointers from him on track?
Even to this day, even with how I've improved, I still come to him, with questions. And on the flip side as well, he still comes to me with what I see from the track and offers up any suggestions on how to drive. We kind of both help each other, figure out what adjustments we could make. And then when you throw my dad into the mix with the adjustments that he makes on the cars as well, he's basically like the Nick Saban of the entire team. just that intensity and attention to the detail with like the execution that he brings. It's that type of combination, as well as the brain power that Vince Bianchi has, and there's a bunch of other guys too that I could go on for days naming. So everybody has their like their individual role and plays their and plays their part, and I think it'll pay off in due time.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's going to be cool, you know, to watch you make your role happen out there. Who's your spotter? Is that your dad or?
Yeah.
Okay. How is that? I know I've asked that before.
Is it hard?
I mean, you know, I know
it's definitely just gotten easier over the years than it was in the in the beginning, because I think he more and more he's starting to see the the effort that I'm putting out there onto the racetrack, and he's starting to see the type of speed that I'm bringing. And that trust with like the feedback and back of the car, we're starting to gain that a little bit.
Have you tried anybody else?
Well, when we had I had Aaron Smith for my entire super late model career, until he moved away, and he was a huge help. He was kind of like a huge help with that. It definitely made my rookie year in that type of class, as well as the next year after that, where we kind of improved on that. It definitely made it a little bit more comfortable for sure.
Do they spot different? Like, is one more like? I mean, how do you like the spotter? Is one person one of those? You know, is your dad more verbal? Like, hey, you should do this.
Yeah.
This, or
my dad's a little bit more instructive.
Okay. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Sometimes he comes off, you know, a little bit crass. Sometimes. But you know, that's just us being passionate about what we do. But he's a damn good spotter. I really don't care what anybody else says otherwise.
Not that anybody's saying anything.
not that anybody says anything. But and then Aaron is you know, when he spotted for me, you know, with his direction, it was just short, sweet, you know, to the point. So
a different style.
Both of them work. As long as there isn't like too much conversation, I'm typically hyper focused on everything that I'm doing.
So is that kind of how your style is? You like to be the driver, but still just have somebody be an extra set of eyes for you?
Absolutely. I think anybody needs that.
And
extra
of course,
set
that
of eyes.
Being instructive helps too, because sometimes you think you're doing something on the track, but you're not, and that extra set of eyes can let you know, hey, you need to do this a little bit different.
And if there's a disagreement, I go back and watch the film and be like, okay, there it is.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well dang, that's eye-opening.
Right, no, that's a good point, because when you're in that, and all of us here know, being on the track, that sometimes we think we're doing one thing, but you look at a video or something like that, and it's like, oh, wow.
It's a very powerful tool.
Videos say it all.
Exactly.
But you also have to have a good relationship with your spotter.
But
because if you guys don't gel spotter can tell you to do something, but if you don't know how to do it, it's not going to matter.
No, exactly.
And
you don't follow.
Spotters mean so much, and you've seen it with Wyatt.
Right.
Wyatt had me, my brother, a couple other people spot for him, and then Ken Ash gets on the radio.
Well,
and Ken Ash, like, drove the truck from outside.
Right.
And Wyatt even said it. Wyatt was like, the just the knowledge that he was able to give Wyatt the July 3rd race, and Wyatt ended up going to win that race, and he was like, that's 100% on Ash, 100%.
Right. Well, you know, different spotters, you know, like because he don't have as much experience in a truck like he has in a bomber or something like that, but he's able to listen to his spotter and do what his spotter.
And
when he got hot, you know, when Gary was kind of getting out of control, Ken – or any spotter will bring that person back
in.
He
said the same thing happened at Orange Show too.
Yeah, different spotter there, but
he had someone that he never even met.
Right.
And the guy knew the track,
but it was somebody
down there.
Yeah, and it's somebody who knew that track.
Knew the track, and but you have to be able to accept it, and not be hard headed and fight against your spotter. You have to be able to.
You got to learn how to adapt, and that just goes back to. Goes back to touring, you know, new different types of tracks. In order to be great at it, you got to learn how to race it first, and how to kind of know what to do and what not to do.
Right.
And I got a heavy dose of that.
Right.
yeah, when I was at Havasu this past year. So hopefully those experiences will make it, along with the 602 package,
right,
hopefully that'll spur some a little bit better results for, for next time around for sure.
Is that the rules now? Is it only 602s where at some point they allowed like an open motor?
I don't think their rules have changed on motors, but on the flip side, if everybody's pretty much running 602, and
right,
it's pretty much preferred to run a 602 out there. Mm-hmm. Like you run a big motor out there, you're going to be toast.
Yeah.
Because anytime you touch the gas, you light the rear tires
right
up, and you just can't.
That's
you
in
just
every
can't,
class out there.
You just mm-hmm can't get any traction out of the corners. So,
right,
so like you mentioned, it's not really a horsepower track. It's,
right,
it's a momentum type track.
No, that's cool. That's what's fun about Havasu, and that's part of the fun of going to these different tracks.
Now, the bombers are fun to watch down there because they're slamming. I don't know if you've been.
And they have
lately
a ton of street stocks out
yeah
there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they do. I'm amazed at how many street stocks they
yeah
have. You know, they're a little different in their super stock rules for Vegas versus the street stock rule there, but they get them down at.
I think between that and the bombers, you know, those might be the two biggest classes
yeah
in terms of car count.
Absolutely. And I know the modifieds, you know, the 602 mods have had a couple races down there, and I don't know.
And
I
like how Vegas and them actually work together mm-hmm on that schedule for them, because most of those guys jump back and forth.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's so close.
Yeah.
Right. Now, and Havasu is a fun track, and they treat everybody, you know.
Well, also, Arizona, you're able to pretty much keep your car on your property. See, Vegas has become so, you know,
all the HOAs.
HOA and everything else, there's really not
yeah
a lot of places to store. You have to store your vehicle or, you know,
honestly,
buy land.
Havasu is just, I feel like they, even like Bill, the owner, walks around and he talks to everybody and treats them like family. And TJ Clark did it this year.
It made a big
and
difference.
It definitely makes a big difference when you actually feel wanted to go to the track and you're not
mm-hmm
seeing the person drive by in a car and not even pay attention. Like, TJ comes through all the time, and, like, with my niece was racing the Bandoleros out there, and TJ was one of the ones that he was pushing for her to get back out there. He
right
was always asking, what's going on? What do we need? What does she need? Like,
right,
that's TJ for
you.
Yeah.
You didn't get that with other guys.
But, no, they pulled off a really good season. To be racers and to just jump in
yep
and take over
yep
management,
yeah,
I imagine wasn't easy.
Yeah.
Right. You know, obviously,
because you have to throw out bias, you have to throw out all this stuff and be a different capacity. And I think the season ran fairly well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of a better individual to kind of lead the charge at the Bullring than TJ right now, just because he's given so much back to, you know, other drivers in the field, such as myself or Dylan Kwasniewski or Jay Beasley or who have you.
Right.
And with any other driver, you know, past or present that he's worked with, or even in the ones that he's working with today, even though he's on the management side, he's still dumping down,
right,
you know, the same life lessons that I learned,
right,
the same life lessons that other drivers learned, and the same life lessons that either Spencer had or he would have given to Spencer, you know,
right,
later on. And that's huge. Like that's powerful. It means a lot more, you know, to kind of race at his track. You really want to do well, you know, on the track, obviously,
right,
but you also want to do better each and every single day, you know, off of that. So it really means a lot to not just to me, but to other individuals that kind of came before me that have seen his craft, that have worked with him, that respect him greatly and admire him greatly. It means a lot more that he's kind of leading the charge, because evidently he's still doing it to this day.
Right.
And he's been around that track for so long. So
yeah,
he's seen the things that worked on that track, and he's seen the things that didn't work and
mm-hmm
over.
Well, obviously,
over the years,
you know, he does have his hands tied to some limitation for
yeah
the management of the,
yeah
the big track, of course. But, you know, and that's anybody who runs that track, whether it's TJ or Tim or whoever ran it before, they all have their hands tied. But,
mm-hmm,
you know, it's great to be able to race, first of all, this last year in
yep
2021, because nobody knew the could have predicted whether we're going to race or not.
Yeah, give him credit for that,
right,
too. Like,
you know,
he made it happen.
And now
all those rumors are going around.
Well, and that momentum is allowing them to have a schedule this year.
Yep.
So every year there's momentum going. You know, the track management can see that.
Even though we're starting a little bit earlier than normal,
right.
But
we're
still racing, so that's good.
And again, that's, you know, you don't know, like, in the higher echelons of the management, what they have going on. And you got to work on their schedules to be able to make it happen. In order to get so many races in, you have to adjust that schedule, and that's not easy to do.
Well,
scheduling is always hard.
Everybody pitched in on mm-hmm. last year's season.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, management did really good, but it was all the race teams.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, they showed up, they pitched in and helped out and did extra when they needed.
Right. A lot of great
sponsors jumped
businesses
in.
Businesses stepped up,
you know,
along with the race, you know, team sponsors that stepped in, like yourself. You have a lot of
mm-hmm.
sponsors, and we'll get to that.
To go into an unknown season like that,
you
don't know that's going to happen, that all these people mm-hmm. committed.
And all the help that, whether they volunteer or paid or whatever, all the help that came with TJ and, you know, all them, Cindy Clark. Yeah, I can't, I'm not going to name anybody because I'm going to forget somebody, but
mostly Cindy and Kevin.
Their whole team. Gary even helped, you know, just everybody. Brian, you know, just there's so
anybody
many
that he
right.
recruited. Heck, even Joe Fari, our season title sponsor for Sigma Engineering Solutions. You know,
right.
he stepped up in a huge way.
Mm-hmm.
Mojave Electric for the modified.
Right.
Sherry Goldstrom.
For the bomber
class.
And the nostalgia,
And even having car shows to even have us guys come out too.
Yeah.
So
there's so many.
Huge.
Yeah, and if obviously there's more. So if you're not mentioned, that's not you know, for any reason.
We could go on all day.
Right.
We need an extra hour.
So everybody wanted the race, and everybody pitched in
right.
some way to make it happen.
Yeah.
And I think it showed. So
we
keep that momentum going.
All right, and speaking of sponsors and stuff, we'll let you talk about yours before we do run out of time, and then we'll get to some other stuff. But you have a number of people that helped you and is going to help you coming up this next season.
Absolutely. So we got, I mentioned Polar Overshades before. They're kind of a huge family to me. Gene Woods Racing Experience. They kind of hopped on board in the middle of the summer. Hopefully they got some suits for us, but Gene's been, you know, I've known Gene for quite a bit,
right.
you know, really great individual, runs a really successful go-karting business. Even took Zoe out to kind of train ain't out there for
cool.
a little bit. So that was pretty cool. That was a highlight of 2021. let's see. We also have Bravo Tickets. They've been on board with me since day one. Diamondback Land Surveying was an awesome support system.
Cool.
You know, this past year. So those are kind of the four, I mean, Frank's European Services.
Oh, okay.
That was a huge partner that got on board. Dying Arizona from Shea Motorsports. You know, it was a pleasure kind of helping them kickstart their bomber program, as well as the Anson organization, Full Metal Worldwide, Steve at CSM Graphics. I got to get a new graphic going this year. so we got to get that going. And I'm working on a couple of other new ones as well. So stay tuned.
As soon as you stay tuned for those.
Come
on back anytime, too. We want to talk about you, your team, your sponsors, the people that back you, and, you know, there's just so much that goes on in just what we call a hobby. It's our lifestyle, really. You know, we don't realize how much a part of our lives it really is, and anybody around us.
Regardless, we'll be back in full force, come heck or high water, really.
Well, you know, you always have a fan on my side. You've been, you know, back from the Superstock days on up, you've been one of my favorite drivers to watch. You're out there.
Thank you, sir.
You're learning. You spread around your experience and make other drivers drive a little bit better, so that's really cool.
Absolutely. So a huge thanks to even to my competitors. They bring out the best in me, and it takes everything I got to to kind of hang with them and have fun running with them.
You know, and that's cool that you said that, because not many people put that out there and say thanks to the competitors, because they do make all of us a better person, a better driver, and all that, you know, hopefully on the track. I mean, there are some hotheads, but hey, that's just the passion that goes.
Race car drivers, hotheads?
but that's a good way, you know, that's cool that you put that out there to the competitors.
Yeah, they give me that carrot that they want to dangle in front of me, and it's a good thing I'm always hungry, and I always try to stay healthy because I want to eat that carrot.
No, that's really cool. That's cool, and you know, we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to watching your prolate program come into play and work out. And
absolutely,
you know, that's really cool. What are you doing? You going to do any skid plate racing? Anything thought about it? Maybe.
Oh, I want to. I'm trying to sort out life at the moment.
Okay. Well, we all have to.
Let life
happen. How about you?
That adulting crap.
I know you got some bomber stuff that you want to do in the future, but life happens.
We'll see what happens there. Cool. I still own my car. It still sits there.
Do I want to be retired from it and not do it again? Absolutely not.
And did I hear that Kevin Terrell is going to be racing his Prolate model?
Hearing and seeing are two different things.
Speaking of Gene Woods, we need to get Monday Mayhem back going.
Did they used to have something like Monday Mayhem?
Me, Mike Miller, Aaron McMorrin, Kevin.
Well, you know what? If you want to, I've been talking about it.
We'll set it up.
That we want to do something.
We'll do a regular charity deal. I think we'll kind of have like our own series of fun, bounce it back and forth between the outdoor track and the indoor track.
Cool.
It'll hone our skills, and we'll have a good time doing it, you know?
We had the money races every Monday where the top three got paid out, and I believe it was like half of everything that, you know, they...
Like a 50-50 thing, okay.
Yeah.
It was heat races and everything. Me and Mike Miller actually became really close friends.
Really?
In racing out there. Triple came out there.
I'm sorry, but...
I don't know if you were ever there for the start of all that. It was more just a bunch of friends going out there, and we were all racers, and we all loved it, and... It just became something really big. I got plaques at home that say first place, second place, third place.
Well, it's cool to do stuff like that because it brings together drivers and different people that on the track, you know, you got real competition, and there you got competition, but it's friendly, a little more friendly.
And it brings racers from different backgrounds. It gives us a taste on what it's like. So think of it as like a Monday evening, you know, jiu-jitsu type practice that MMA guys go through.
We had guys back there from they race motorcycles. Josh Burden. I don't know if you remember him coming out. He was all street like Indy cars and stuff like that. Jason Richter, who his dad was the run. He ran the go-kart. His son used to come.
Really good driver, by the way. Jason. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so that your job is to put something together for us. So we'll
talk to Gene about it. We'll figure it out.
I worked for Gene for a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Gene's a really really cool dude, and his resume speaks for himself. It's definitely neat to have him on board with us.
If you don't know anything about Gene Woods and all the other sponsors that. You're talking about, you look it up online. Where can somebody go to find out more about you and what's the best way to find
everything's
you?
On Twitter and Instagram and as well as Facebook at Johnny Spilotro, JohnnySpilotro. And I'm like a few away from like 1,000 followers. I know that's not that big of a deal.
Oh, that's a big deal.
But it took me a long time to get to like that follower account. So. All right. If I reach 1,000 by the end of this year, you know, that'll be huge, right?
You're buying the pizza.
I'll buy it this time.
Okay.
This time.
You can get some tips from Mr. TikTok over there.
There you go.
I got 45,000 followers on TikTok.
Really? Wow.
I mean, I need tips from TikTok. I mean, I should be on that more doing comedy stuff, but like, I just don't have the time to do it.
Right.
I fell off. Big time lately. I'm TikTok live right now, so.
Oh, there you go. But we're not promoting TikTok or anything like that, or Justin in particular.
No, fan Justin.
We're here for Johnny Spilotro tonight. We only got probably a minute left, but looking forward to your race program. We're looking forward to your team. It's you know, tell everybody we said hello over there.
Absolutely, we will.
And we'll definitely watch out for you. And when's the first race? Do we find out? Is that February 5th?
February 5th.
And they do have an open practice before that.
Yeah.
Am I correct on that? Is it January
28th? January 28th.
28th?
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking about running the All-Star Showdown at Irwindale. But
oh,
since
that
they have
cool.
that, that's,
yeah.
since they happened on the same weekend, that
right.
kind of thought probably a good thing, though. I know they have, you know, some other races on the half mile in
right.
May, so we'll probably shoot for those.
Cool.
You know, God willing, but we'll see about that.
That's really cool. Again, thanks again, Johnny, for coming in. Thanks. I didn't mean to steal the spotlight from you. But
the whole time he's like, Justin, you're running it. Justin, you're running it.
Right. Yeah, I know. And he just takes all the questions. It's like, what the heck?
Again,
I don't think they pay you enough.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Merry Christmas, everybody. Be safe out there and, you know, have a good time. We'll have one more show by before the end of the year, and Gary will be back for that. Thanks for coming in, Johnny. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
You and your family.
Yeah, merry off season. Happy Christmas. See y'all in 2022.
Thank you.